All right, we're trying this again, Chris Graham, and we'll have Seth Megginson on in just a second, and we'll see if folks can actually hear us. That's a big thing. NCAA Tournament Coronavirus Edition. Maybe our live studio caught some problems there. But we're going to be going through the Sunday action in our NCAA Tournament brackets and punching 8 more tickets to the 2020 Sweet 16. And so it looks like things are working on my end. Let's see if we can get Seth back in here. Seth, how are you?
I'm doing good, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, not sure what happened there, but we're back now, and that's all that matters. So thanks for holding out for us here. We tried a couple times to get in on the first. So for the people listening on the archive especially, you're wondering what's going on. Well, yeah, we had some technical issues, but you won't know that because you didn't hear that. So so Seth and I broke down the first 3 days of the 2020 NCAA tournament based on Seth's bracketology, his final bracketology for us. So we're going by our brackets. Everybody else has their own brackets out there, all the celebrity bracketologists, etc. But we have some fun action today, and we're going to go through our Sunday matchups. And let's get started, Seth, with Omaha action in the Midwest Regional. And number one seed and number one overall seed, I'm sure, Kansas, facing number nine Florida. Break this one down for us.
This is a pretty interesting matchup here because everyone knew going into the year that Florida was going to be like a top 10 basketball team. Everyone was very, you know, definitely thought that they were the favorites for the SEC. And yeah, this year just hasn't turned out to be the year that the Gators would probably have liked to have. So this is a very intriguing second round matchup. It may be a second round matchup that Kansas fans wouldn't necessarily be thrilled about. It would be a very interesting matchup to see down low between Azubuike and Blackshear. Florida, like I said, pretty underwhelming this year, a little underachieving going up against the number one team overall. But still, I think this game could be, you know, down to the wire. This is the best Kansas defensive team, I think, since the 2010 team that actually got beat in the second round by Northern Iowa, if people remember. But I think Florida would have a hard time scoring in this game. I really do. I think Blackshear would probably get in foul trouble. I used to always make the joke when he was at Virginia Tech, he started a game with four fouls because it seemed like he was always one foul away from fouling out of the game. So, yeah, I honestly think that Kansas's defense would carry them in this game, would carry them through, but I really think this game would be close. Like, I think this game would come down to the wire. I think Florida would be able to slow Kansas down a little bit, and yeah. But I think at the end of the day, someone like Dotson for Kansas would probably take over late. And like I said, I think Blackshear would probably get in foul trouble in this game, trying to slow down Azubuike. So I'm going to go with Kansas, but I will say that I think Kansas would get a scare in this one.
I'll point out about Kansas. I did some numbers last year before the NCAA tournament started, looking at KenPom.com's efficiency numbers. And I came after looking at basically until last year, the 17 national champions in the KenPom era, all of them before the tournament started were top 15 in both offense and defense. It just showed it was interesting. Well, excuse me, all but one. Connecticut in 2014 was not. They were the anomaly. But the 16 of the other 17 were top 15 in offense and defense. And it just shows you that the NCAA tournament tends to sort of reward those teams that are balanced, you know. And this year's Virginia team, for example, number one in defense, but way down, like below 200 in offense. I bring this up. Kansas going into the tournament, number eight in offense, number two in defense in terms of efficiency. And so, Seth, to your point about this Kansas team and what it can do defensively to opposing teams is well noted. But man, that offense is pretty good too. So. And this the Florida team coming into the tournament had lost three of its last five. Now two of those were to Kentucky, a number two seed. But yeah, we'll go ahead and we'll put Kansas into the Sweet 16. So we've got our first ticket punched. And the other matchup in Omaha is a South Regional game. And these folks are lucky. They get two number one seeds in their building. They get Baylor versus number eight seed LSU in the South Region. Take us through this one.
So yeah, this is a classic, really good defensive team in Baylor versus a really good offensive team in LSU. LSU, I believe, in scoring and offensive efficiency, they are number four. Yep, and then also in scoring points per game, they are number four. So yeah, and then you have Baylor, who obviously all year they've really relied on their defense. Their defense has been what's kind of carried them through this past season. They're fifth in scoring defense in the country. And then with defensive efficiency, let me see if I can pull that up. Yep, they're fifth in that as well. So, yeah, so you have a team that's a top five offensive team in LSU versus a top five defensive team in Baylor. So, yeah, it's going to be, you know, your classic matchup of who's going to insert their will on the other team. It's kind of surprising because I didn't realize, even though I follow a lot more SEC basketball, I didn't realize how many scoring options LSU had. It kind of surprised me a little bit. I didn't realize that they had five guys that are in the double figures in scoring. Mays, Watford, Williams, Smart, and Days all average over 10 points a game. And I think Baylor would have a hard time in this game. I really do. I know that we've talked about their defense being very good, but I think they'd have a hard time slowing down LSU because that's a lot of different options where the Tigers can score on you. Baylor would have to have big games from Butler and Teague if they wanted to advance in this game. And honestly, the more I did research on this game, the more my mind changed on this one. I'm going to go with the first one seed getting knocked off here, Chris. I'm going to say LSU upsets Baylor and gets the Sweet 16. I just think they have too many options, scoring options against Baylor. And honestly, I felt like Baylor had kind of faded in the back half of the season. After they lost that game to Kansas, I felt like they didn't look like the same exact team. I want to pick Baylor because I don't like picking the one seeds to lose so early, but I just, the more and more I look at it, the more and more I just feel like LSU's a bad matchup for them. And so I'm going to go with the Tigers on an upset here.
Yeah, and for our listeners out there, if you want to join in, we're actually not going to take calls just because I've worked in TV and radio for a number of years, and live calls from people that we've not been able to vet are a little scary. We don't have a production person taking calls and then screening, so to speak. So I'm sure that what you'd have to offer would be really good, but just on that chance that it would not be and would not only be bad, but could be, you know, off the rails. But feel free, please, to input a message into the app. And if you have a question or comment, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. To your point about Baylor's slide down the stretch, especially, you know, they're a team from that metric I just mentioned with Kansas. They're just outside of that national championship realm, not by much. 17th on offense efficiency-wise, fourth on defense. But defensively, in the last, let's say, five games, they lost three of their last five. Gave up more than a point per possession in that loss to Kansas. Just less than a point per possession in the win over Kansas State. Again, more than a point per possession in the TCU loss. Exactly a point per possession overtime win over Texas Tech. And then again, another where they gave up more than a point per possession in the West Virginia loss at the end of their regular season. So defensively, they had slid a bit in the last five games. Even in their wins, they were giving up more than they'd given up through the season. And actually, the offense had been, you know, underperforming to that level. So, yeah, Baylor was sliding. LSU gets to be our first slayer of a top seed here in our bracket. So we will move on now to the Cleveland Regional, Midwest Regional game. This would be fun. Oh, man, the two fan bases would love this one. Michigan State, West Virginia. Take us through it.
Yeah, so we're going here with another team that a little bit underachieved but made their way back up to the top, Michigan State, because there for a while people were wondering, what's wrong with Sparty? Now here they are as a three seed in my tournament, so I guess they're just fine. And then playing another team that I know that they are coming off of that big win against Baylor that you just mentioned, West Virginia, but they're another team that kind of had slid back a little bit and wasn't up to form as they were back in January and February, per se. One thing about West Virginia that I didn't know while I was doing research is I did not realize that they led the country in offensive rebounding, and they kind of led it by kind of a significant margin. So, yeah, so one thing about West Virginia is they get to the rim, they get second chances. And Michigan State, that they're a pretty solid rebounding team themselves, so I think that would really cancel out West Virginia, and give West Virginia a lot of fits in this game. It all have to do with the style of West Virginia's play, you know, trying to get pressure on Winston, but he's also a veteran guard who I don't think the moment's going to get to him, and I don't think West Virginia can throw anything at him that he's not seen before. I think Michigan State in this game would just be a little too much for West Virginia. I think West Virginia could play in this game. I think it could be close, but I think there's just too many weapons for this Spartan team. They're starting to play their best basketball of the season. And like I said, what West Virginia does really good, I feel like Michigan State does good enough that it's not going to be something that West Virginia can take advantage of. I say this could be one of those games where Michigan State's leading by a few points for, you know, a significant amount of the game, and then like the final 5-6 minutes, the Spartans just pull away and kind of put the nail in the coffin. I think West Virginia will give a valid effort, but I think Michigan State just is too strong for them here, and they'll advance to the second round.
Yeah, Michigan State, another team with that profile that I mentioned, top 15 offense and defense, number 10 offense, number 13 defense in terms of efficiency per KenPom.com. So they have that profile. West Virginia's defense, I agree, we'll keep them in it. They're number 3 defensively in the country in efficiency. They both play a pace, 69 possessions per game, so it would be a game where the score would likely be in the low 70s probably. But we're going to advance Michigan State to the Sweet 16. So our other matchup in Cleveland, East Regional game, another number 1 seed, Dayton, taking on number 8 seed, Arizona. Take us through it, Seth.
Yeah, so I feel like this game will be a I don't know why, but when I think about this game, I expect this game to be like in the 80s. I think both of these teams will be able to score at will. I know both of them, I think, are in the top. I know Dayton is definitely up there in offense this year. Yeah, they were ranked 6th, where Michigan State, where Arizona is ranked 28th. But I just have a feeling that Arizona would be able to get points here. This, I think, would be a really big game for Tipton. I think this would be like kind of his, I wouldn't say his coming out party, because I feel like the Maui Invitation was his coming out party. But I think this is kind of his tournament game where he kind of shows everybody like, okay, Dayton can make a run in this thing. I think it would be a back and forth game. Arizona, you know, I've said about them when we talked about them in the their first game, you don't know what you're going to get with them. Sometimes I feel like they look like they're the best team in the Pac-12, and then other times I watch them, I'm like, they're not an NCAA tournament team. But Arizona's got some scoring options. Najee, Mann, and Green, they can all score points for them. And so it would be interesting to see how Dayton can slow them down, because Arizona's going to get their points, like I said. But I think at the end of the day, Dayton would be able to outscore Arizona. I would say this game would probably be like in the high 70s, maybe in the 80s, and be a very entertaining second-round matchup. And I think it would give Dayton a little bit of a scare here. But I think at the end of the day, I think Toppin would take over. And, yep, I will advance the Dayton Flyers to the Sweet 16.
All right, so Dayton gets the Sweet 16, and two of our 3-1 seeds playing on Sunday get to the next weekend. And, yeah, Arizona had lost 4 of 5 before defeating Washington in the first round of the Pac-12 tournament before things got called off. So they weren't playing their best basketball of the season necessarily down the stretch. And Dayton just been good all season long. So we'll take the Flyers to the next round. And, you know, they'll be heading to New York City, theoretically, in our brackets here. They'd be playing in the Garden. That was 6 years ago. Virginia made it to the Sweet 16 as a number 1 seed, played in Madison Square Garden, and it's a magical place to watch some basketball. We're going to skip down to the Sacramento bracket, West Region. Both these games are in the West Region, and a local team for us in Virginia, the number 12 seed Liberty, taking on the number 4 seed out West, Oregon. What you got here, Seth?
Yeah, another classic offense-defensive game here. You have Liberty, who is one of the best defensive teams in the country. I think they have the second best defensive efficiency. I think Virginia they're up there in the, maybe it's scoring defense. They're second, only behind Virginia, against Oregon, who is actually the second best 3-point percentage team in this country. So yeah, it's going to be a very interesting game. Another, you know, clash of styles and who can play the way that they want the game to be played. Oregon has Pritchard, who I think is obviously one of the best players in the country. And say he can score at will. He's definitely a deep threat. I think Liberty would have a hard time with him, slowing him down. He's going to get his points in this game for sure. But then at the same time, Liberty's defense, though, is good enough that it can shut down just about anybody in the country. And I think the other four guys for Oregon would have a hard time scoring on Liberty. And one thing about Liberty as well is they don't turn the ball over. They don't turn the ball over at all. They're a good defensive team. Don't turn the ball over. And that just spells just havoc for me for opposing teams. And like I said, I'm not a huge fan of what I've seen from Pac-12 teams this year. I'm sorry, I don't mean to pick on the Pac-12. I think that the Pac-12 teams kind of got a little bit more praise this year than they've kind of deserved. I think it was because more of, you know, they're better this year than they have been in years past, but it wasn't still, to me, not that great. I think Oregon definitely is the best team out there. I think that this game would be very interesting. I think this would probably be a game that scored maybe in the 50s to 60s, even though Oregon is, you know, typically getting more points. But no, I actually am going to say that, and I'm not just saying this because they're a Virginia team, I'm going to say that I think Liberty will protect the ball. They'll play good, hard-nosed defense. I know what I'm going to get out of them. I think they're going to eke out a win here against the Oregon Ducks and make a trip to the Sweet 16 for the first time in school history. And, yeah, I mean, doesn't make you upset that we're not getting this tournament now, that we couldn't see something like that happen.
Please, no respect for the Conference of Champions. I can't believe it, young man. So just for folks out there, too, Seth's definitely not biased here in any way because he's a Radford grad. I can't imagine a Radford grad wants to put Liberty in the Sweet 16. So this is authentic here on your part, Seth.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this, if you haven't watched this Liberty basketball team, it's a good basketball team. And I keep talking about their defense, but Liberty, like Mosley for Liberty, I mean, he can score. Or Holmesley, sorry, not Holmesley. Yeah. I was like, I think I said that wrong. but he can score for Liberty. He's a very good basketball player. And then James, who they have underneath, he can be someone who can really stifle guys underneath, though I do think he kind of has the black shear problem, too, of always being in foul trouble. But no, this Liberty team is a good basketball team. And if they played against Oregon, you know, even if the game was in Oregon, I would like Liberty's chances just because I think that this is a very solid basketball team that knows what they do well, sticks to it, and, yeah, they get the job done.
They also play that pace. The coach is Richie McKay. He was a longtime disciple of Tony Bennett at Virginia. There are 353 basketball teams in Division I. Virginia has the 353rd fastest tempo, and the 352nd fastest tempo is Liberty. So if you need any picture, if you've not seen Liberty play this year, if you need any picture of what a game would look like, just think of a Virginia game. And he just took it about 40 miles south or so of Charlottesville and took it down to Liberty in Lynchburg. And so, yeah, I can go with that. I can go with Liberty going to the Sweet 16. Other matchup out west, we've already got the folks in the gym there in Sacramento riled up. They've just seen an upset. Now we have San Diego State and Providence. Another upset in the making here, possibly?
Well, San Diego State, everyone knows, and I had that really long unbeaten streak here, and then lost it, I think it was a game against UNLV, and then lost their conference tournament to Utah State, lost in their final. So that's why they fell to a 2 seed. And they're going up against the Providence team that the last time I praised a lot. I said that I thought the Big East tournament wouldn't have been canceled. They actually were the team that I was picking to win because they've just been playing very good basketball, have been, you know, if I feel like they've been scoring at will. I mean, every game that I've watched of theirs in the last couple weeks but one, I felt like they were scoring up in the 80s, 90s points. And like I said, the one game where they didn't score all those points was they only scored 58, but they still won against Villanova. So I think they kind of showed that, you know, they can play both sides of the ball right now. Like, I think early in the season, their defense wasn't what was catching up with them, but their defense is actually playing a lot better now. So I think, yeah, Providence is just one of those teams that coming into the tournament, if I was a fan of anybody, I would be like, do not want to see them. Do not want to see them on first day, first weekend, even Sweet 16. I think that that's how good this Providence team has been playing the last couple weeks. But, you know, San Diego State's been solid all year. They can score. They play really good defense. They kind of have it all. You know, they have plenty of guys on the court who can score from different ways. And then, yeah, I think they're third in defensive efficiency in the country. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that. And they're always a good, you know, well-coached team, the Aztecs. So I think this will be a very fun game. I think this would be like maybe like the buzzer beater game, if you wanted to call one that, for this round. But at the end of the day, I actually am going to take Providence. I'm going to take Providence because I just think that right now they are playing such good basketball. They're playing such good basketball at the end of the year. And San Diego State, you know, they kind of started showing some cracks in the armor. And, yeah, I think that this Providence team is actually the better basketball team, too, when it comes down to it. I know that sounds crazy when talking about a team that I say could score and also is, like, the third best defensive team in the country. But the last couple of times I've watched San Diego State, I kind of walked away saying, I think people have started to figure them out or something's, like, starting to happen there where they're starting to come back down to earth. And, yeah, so I think it's a tale of two teams that are trajecting in opposite directions, and I'm going to go with Providence here to punch a ticket to the Sweet 16, knocking off San Diego State.
Another big upset, and so what actually I have here, third in scoring defense, but and 10th in defensive efficiency, but that's still, San Diego State has the profile, again, that classic profile that I'm looking for when I'm talking about teams that can have a chance to win six straight, 11th in offensive efficiency, 10th in defensive efficiency, but I'll point this out like I pointed out about Baylor. Those are season-long numbers, okay? That's one thing to note. You look at their last six games. Now, San Diego State only went 4-2 in them. I say only. They were 26-0 until their last six. But when you look at that last six, defensively, a point per game in the loss defensively given up to UNLV in that loss February 22nd, pretty close to a point per game in their wins over Air Force and Colorado State, gave up much more than a point per game, a point per possession in the win over Nevada, much more than a point per possession in their win over Boise State. So, yeah, they weren't playing their best defense down the stretch, and defense is what wins championships. That's what we think in Virginia anyway. So two huge upsets out west, Liberty and Providence. That would be a fun day for the just casual basketball fans either there or just across the country seeing those games from there. So I saved the best for last, the Greensboro brackets, both of these in the East region. And, man, this could be fun. We'll start with the Duke-ETSU matchup. And ETSU fans would be salivating at the prospect of being able to play Duke in Greensboro, not just a relative short drive over the mountains for them in a dream matchup for ETSU. And, of course, Duke is Duke. So take us through this one, Seth.
Yeah, so this game is going to be filled with really good guard play. If you haven't watched ETSU yet, ETSU has really, I would say for like the lower conference schools, not counting like, you know, obviously the ones that are always good, like Gonzaga, they have some of the best guard play of like the lower end conference schools that I've seen. ETSU, yeah, I think would definitely have to give Duke's guards a lot of fits, and they're more than capable of it. ETSU has three guys, and Boyd, Hodges, and Williamson, who can all score. They play sound. They can play sound defense. But then you also got Jones for Duke, who I think is probably the best pure point guard in the country. So I think he also will give ETSU guards fits. So, yeah, it would be very interesting to watch the guard play. I think that would be super fun. Probably the difference in this game is probably going to be Carey Jr. I think that ETSU would have a hard time stopping him. I really would wish, like, I really hope that I could somehow see this game play out because, you know, I always like watching a lower-end team play Duke with, you know, because they always come out with fire and passion. It's like, it's Duke. We, you know, that's what you go into the NCAA tournament to do. You go in the NCAA tournament because you want to draw, like, the Carolinas and the Dukes and the Kansases of the world, and you want to be all fired up and trying to knock them off and, you know, advance your team to the next round. So, yeah, I think this would be a great game with it in Greensboro. I think the atmosphere would be crazy, and I think the ETSU would play Duke a lot closer than maybe some people will think. I really am high on this ETSU team. However, I'm not as high on them to say that they can beat Duke. I think Duke will find a way to win this game. Krzyzewski will make the adjustments that he'll need to. And like I said, I think ETSU would have a hard time stopping Carey. Duke also, you know, Duke would be able, I think, to get some turnovers in this game. I know I praised the ETSU guards, but I think down the stretch, I think Duke's guards will just be able to kind of take over the game, force some turnovers. I think Duke was one of the top teams in the country in like blocks and steals. I think their defense would actually kind of shine through in this game. As much as I want to say ETSU and I want to put them in the Sweet 16, but I want to be a little bit realistic here as well. Duke will make another trip to the Sweet 16 here, but not without a fight from the Buccaneers at East Tennessee.
Yeah, I'd have to go with you there. Carey's too much of a guy for a team with that kind of size or lack of size. And Jones, defensively, I often scoffed at the talk about him being the best defensive player in the ACC. And then I saw what he did to Kia Clark. Virginia won the game in JPJ back on February 29th. But Trey Jones, he didn't even let Kia Clark get the ball. Virginia had to run their offense through other guards. He face guarded Kia Clark and kept him away from even having the ball in his hands a lot of times. So if you can do that, you can. You know, it's kind of like a cornerback in football that takes away half the field, and he can do that to you. So I'll go with you there as well, and we'll punch their ticket. Now I'm gonna change protocol for just a second on this one. This is the Virginia Maryland matchup that our Virginia fan listeners out there are most sad that they're going to miss. During the season I do pregame preview columns that I call "What UVA Basketball Fans Need to Know About." This one I've headlined because I wrote this yesterday. What UVA basketball fans wish they needed to know about Maryland. Just to give a little history of this series, these are, of course, I mean, Maryland was in the ACC for over 60 years, I think it was, one of the original members, and before they went to the Big Ten. And now I guess we're starting to think of them as actual Big Ten. We haven't seen them in a while. But these two were good rivals back in the 80s, the Lefty Driesell and Terry Holland rivalries, and then Gary Williams and Jeff Jones had a couple of nice games. Everything from Ralph making his last shot at U-Haul in the final seconds to win his last game there. There was a 1995 regular season finale where a UVA team beat Maryland to earn a share of the ACC title with Maryland. That was the good Joe Smith, Keith Booth team at Maryland. Thinking through now, Tony, I didn't realize this, Seth, until I looked it up, but Tony Bennett actually won 8 of his last 9 in this series. Including his ACC, the Maryland's ACC finish up stretch, but also Virginia played Maryland in the ACC Big Ten Challenge last year, actually, national championship year. And so Tony's won 8 of his last 9 in his series. And so you can just imagine in Greensboro today, we would all be, you know, a lot of us would be down the road, just 3 hours down 29, and we'd be in Greensboro. The Greensboro Coliseum will be a sea of orange, I would imagine. A little bit about Maryland real quick. They're a classic 1-2 punch of a good point guard and a really good big guy. The point guard, Anthony Cowan, 16 points a game, 32.2% from three-point range. In the center, 6'10 center, Jalen Smith. And Jalen Smith's he's a modern 6'10 center. 15.5 points, 10.5 rebounds a game. Shoots 53.8% from the field and 36.8% from three. He takes you outside, too. He doesn't just post up. Cowan gets the rim. 32.9% of his shots are at the rim, according to hoopmath.com. And he shoots 55.6% at the rim. And he gets to the line. I mean, this kid gets to – he averages 6.8 free throw attempts per game. He's a tough point guard. He gets to – he can shoot the three. He can get in the lane. He can convert at the rim. He can hit the – he can hit those – and gets to the foul line a lot. And then, of course, Jalen Smith's so tough because he's really good at the rim, 72.2% at the rim. So he's an elite post player, and he can shoot those threes. And those threes are on fair numbers of threes. He averages close to 3 3-point attempts a game. So it's not a small sample size kind of number. Other than that, Mark Turgeon goes with a pretty light rotation. Pretty much the last 10 games or so, he's down to a 6-man rotation. And so he rides his horses, he rides them far, and he'll try to ride them all the way through. 18th in the nation in offensive efficiency, 22nd in defensive efficiency, just outside of that realm I'm looking for an elite championship level team, but they're right there on the edge of that. The challenges for Virginia here, Seth, I actually would love to have seen the Momni Diakite, Jalen Smith matchup here. You know, they both played each other last year when these two teams met in College Park, but they were both role players on those teams. Momni was a fourth or fifth wheel on that team for Virginia. Bruno Fernandez was the big guy in the post for Maryland. So these two guys are sort of mirror images, not statistically necessarily because Virginia plays a slower pace, but Diakite is a guy at 6'9", who's a great defensive player, scores at the rim, can shoot the three. They play each other. They play so similarly. It would have been fun to see that matchup. And Kia Clark would have the grand challenge of trying to slow down Cowan. Clark is, I guess we can say after talking about Trey Jones, Clark's the second best defensive point guard in the ACC. And he would have his hands full, but I think he would be up to the task. So, Seth, now that I've given you all that preview, give us your thoughts on this game.
Yeah, this is going to be a very interesting matchup. I think it'd be a very difficult matchup for Virginia, honestly. If you remember the game last year, Maryland, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, Maryland was leading at a couple points in that game late, were they not?
Yeah,
there was a couple, because I felt like remembering that game, there was a couple times where I thought that Maryland actually had it won. But yeah, so I think it would be a very, very fun game. I think it would be very similar to that game last year where, yeah, it's nobody's going to get more than like a couple points ahead of the other one. And yeah, one thing that you were talking about was Cowan being able to get to the line. Virginia, I feel like Virginia is one of the best teams in the country, though, about, you know, not letting people who normally get to the line a lot get to the line. I think that Virginia could cancel that out. I really do. As I say, Virginia is just so disciplined on defense that I think if Cowan's going to get his points, he's not going to get them from the free throw line. I think he's going to get them, you know, just by traditionally scoring. You were talking about Smith. Yeah, Smith and Diakite, that matchup would be fun to watch. Smith is definitely, he's just a beast down low. And, you know, Diakite has really come to form since last year's NCAA tournament. So they're two totally different guys than, like you said, from last year's matchup when they met each other. I wish this game was going on. I really do, because I think this would be just such a fun game to watch. Two traditional rivals playing each other, two fan bases who, even though they haven't played each other as much as they normally do, I'm pretty sure they still don't like each other. It's not like it's been that long. But yeah, so I think Virginia would definitely have their hands full, but also Maryland would too. You know, you're playing a team who's playing really well, is playing their best basketball team, I mean best basketball right now in Virginia, and we talk about it all the time, the pace of play and everything like that. Maryland, there's no stranger to that. Maryland can play slow. I think Maryland's defensive efficiency is up there, just not as high, obviously, as Virginia, but I believe it's somewhere in the 20s. So they can play solid defense, too, and so Virginia will struggle to get points. I honestly think that this would be a game where if Clark is going to show, like, what the future is going to hold for him at Virginia, like, if he's the next future star, this is the game for him to come out and do that. We all know, though, that he'll be able to play good defense in this game, that he'll be able to play the best probably anyone can play on Cowan. So, yeah, I think this would be the game where he kind of signifies his kind of takeover as this being his team. Because right now, I still think it feels like it's Diakite's team, but, you know, he's leaving. I think this would be the game where Clark really shines through and people are like, all right, now it's UVA is Clark's team. This is the team that, you know, is going to be built around Clark. I definitely would be super interested in those two matchups that you talked about. And then you talked about the depth of Maryland that Maryland has. They don't really use that much depth. Virginia, I mean, I guess they use their depth a little bit more than Maryland, but also, you know, they don't get a lot of production out of those guys that they use. But at the same time, I think that that's still a big factor that, you know, Virginia is going to be not as, I feel like Maryland is going to be, you know, pushing the whole game, like trying to speed things up just a little bit, even though that they're not the fastest paced team, but they don't want to play Virginia's pace. That I think that maybe that could wear wear down on Maryland after a while. So I think the two big key aspects here for Virginia is just the way that Clark plays and the way that they can maybe manage their depth compared to Maryland. This game would be, I feel like this game would come down to the wire, maybe another game that's decided in the final 10 or so seconds, but let's put Virginia in the Sweet 16, and we'll say Clark makes his clutch shot late in the game, and this, like I said, it was his kind of coming out party as Virginia being his team, and they'll be able to take out Maryland, and I think this would match them up with Kentucky in the Sweet 16.
And for our listeners out there, Seth's only saying that because I'm pointing a bayonet at his head right now. That's okay. Because this would be a tough matchup for Virginia. And honestly, part of this is we have to also have things to write about for our fan base. So I need to be able to write about Virginia going in next week just so we can keep some readers on the site happy of that kind of thing and clicking. This will be a tough matchup. I do think that the one thing in Virginia that would keep Virginia in this one more would be the relative lack of depth at Maryland. I mean, their six guys they play are six really good players. Their six man would start for most teams, but the fact that Turgeon has narrowed his bench so much is probably an indication of he trusts those guys, doesn't trust his bench, and when you play Virginia, the thing about playing Virginia that's so tough, you hear so much about how much they make you work on defense, but they do. I mean, obviously the pack line defense, you have to work for 25, 30 seconds to even get a shot off, which is so tough, but they make you work on offense too. The people who don't pay close attention to UVA basketball think that all the point guard does is bounce the ball at the, 40 feet from the basket on the offensive end for 20 seconds, and then they run a play and shoot it at the end of the shot clock, and that is not what they do. They're constantly running. The guards are running off screens. The bigs are moving around everywhere, setting screens. That's what the mover blocker offense is about. It's a three-guard, two-forward offense, and those two forwards are constantly setting screens, and I'm talking about a whir of activity. And so that's where the effect is. It's you have to work harder than you play against anyone else on the defensive end, and then you got to work really hard on the offensive end yourself. So it's an accumulation factor, and teams that have depth can withstand it. Florida State, for example, we talked about them yesterday. They have 11 guys who play 10 minutes a game. Virginia still beat them head-to-head. It was a 1-1 series split between the Virginia and the number 4 team in the country, Florida State. Virginia lost by 4 at Florida State, won by 5 at Virginia. So, I mean, they can even make those kind of teams work hard. But, a team that only sends six guys out there, if I was hanging my hat on anything right here in the Virginia-Maryland matchup, it would be that, Virginia makes you work too much to send six guys out there. That's the kind of thing that this Maryland team, I'm not sure, would be used to. Even having played rugged Big Ten basketball, I'm not sure they're used to playing a game like a Virginia where – it just feels like we've been using this term a lot this year about this Virginia team, because this Virginia team, how many times have I had to say this? 10 games this year decided by 3 points or less. Virginia's 9-1 in them. They're as good as anybody I've ever seen in terms of the 25 years I've been covering college basketball as a journalist at winning tight games like that. I just can't imagine that there's any team out there that's ever had that kind of a run in 3 point or less games. And it's because I said this about this team, Seth, they know how to do two things: play defense and win. They can't score. They can't do a lot of things out there. They're not pretty, but they can play defense and they can win. So there's my love sonnet to Virginia basketball here for the weekend. We'll happily send them to Madison Square Garden. And now I'm really getting teary-eyed, Seth, because I'd be going back to New York next week.
Oh yeah, and it'd be a matchup against Kentucky, one you don't really see that often. So yeah,
that would be, man, even better.
That'd be fun. And then also, you look at the other side of that bracket. You got Dayton and Duke. I would love to watch that one. So I mean,
oh my God, the Garden would the roof would come off the Garden. I can't, because you'd have the defending champs. You'd have Kentucky and Duke. Taking place. $5,000 a ticket is what they'd be.
And then Dayton, well, I don't know if you saw the Maui Invitational. Dayton fans travel, so they'll buy up some tickets too.
You have two blue bloods, you have the defending champs, and you have this year's darlings. Oh my God, that would have been just the craziest scene of all time. They might not have even credentialed me. I might be talking about going to New York. I don't think I might. It might be hard to get a. You know, when we went to Madison Square Garden in 2014. You know, I'm used to all the years I've covered Virginia basketball. You know, you sit courtside, you sit just, at JPJ now, you sit a little up the first section, but it's still great seats. And so, you know, my first NCAA tournament games I've covered sitting courtside and just like, wow, in the ACC tournament, you sit there. I've had to throw the ball back to the referees. You're sitting so close. UVA plays Michigan State in the Madison Square Garden in the Sweet 16. Now, one, the weird thing was we're in New York, East Coast, and we're in the East Regional, and they didn't tip in until like 10:15. So, like, whoa, this is really interesting. I didn't leave the arena that night after writing stories and interviews and everything else until about 2:30 in the morning. But you're used to, like, in an NCAA tournament situation. We were the second game that night. I think UConn played like Iowa State, I think, in the first game.
Yep.
And like 8 o'clock tip, whatever it was, or 7:45 tip. And so you're used to the writers, you know, you're sitting up top maybe for the first game. Second game, they'll put you down on the floor because you're covering, you know, the team you're covering is playing now. Oh, no, we were up top. And my wife, Crystal, went with me on the trip, and we found her a ticket like at the last minute times 10. For like $300, and it just turned out the ticket she got, she was sitting in the section with Spike Lee. Basically, she was two rows behind Spike Lee. So the Jay-Z song, you know, trip a referee kind of thing. She was in a Spike Lee section where she could trip a referee. She texted me and said, "Hey, where are you?" And I said, "Hey, can you see that Clyde Frazier jersey, that number 10 jersey hanging up there? I can almost touch it." I was on the media for Virginia, and we were all there. Jeff White and Doug Dowdy and the rest of us, we were all on the sixth floor of Madison Square Garden watching that basketball game. I didn't want to complain, and I didn't, because it was still Madison Square Garden, but I'm also a little scared of heights. It was kind of steep, and I was in the garden technically. I was not much closer than the planes flying to LaGuardia, but I was in the garden, and very memorable experience. It was a great game. Virginia lost by one. I'd always wanted to go see a game in Madison Square Garden. I always wanted to wait until somehow Virginia was playing in a game there. I got to do that. Don't get the return trip this year, unfortunately, but man, it would have been Virginia, Kentucky. We had Virginia, Michigan State the first time. It would have been Virginia, Kentucky with a chance at either Virginia Duke in a regional final or maybe a Virginia Dayton regional final. Ah, you're killing me here, buddy.
Oh, I'm sorry. And like I said, I'm sorry that I made the tournament this way. I'm sorry for everything that I put you through. I'm sorry that we don't have the NCAA basketball tournament to go through this together. I'm sorry for everything, Chris.
Yeah, well, hey, for our listeners out there, though, and as we're wrapping up here, at least we can dream. That's all we can do. And and Seth, I want to thank you for walking us through this first weekend. We've got through four days, I should say, of this tournament. And we'll get back together on Thursday, and we'll start breaking down the Sweet 16. So thanks, buddy, and we'll catch back up here again in a little bit.
All right, thanks for having me.
And for our listeners out there, thank you for joining us. And, we'll have some previews of Virginia, Kentucky, and a lot more. Talk to you again soon.